Mr. O'Connor, when you're ready, you can correct me if I've mispronounced that name.
Sustada.
Okay.
May it please the court. My name is Stephen O'Connor. I'm counsel for Mr. Sustada. Luis is a 43-year-old man born in Mexico, where at the age of 21, he entered the U.S. without inspection. His wife at the time, Consuela Palacios, also entered with their two children who were also born in Mexico. They moved to Austin, Texas. They had a child there named Judith, born in 2005, and she is a U.S. citizen. He and Consuela's marriage broke up.
We do know all the facts. Your time's precious for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Has he been removed, and when was he removed?
He was removed on September 18th, 2020.
Okay, that's a while ago. And when was the UCIS denial of?
July 27th, 2023.
And this is not focused on you. It's both parties. We're getting the 28J notices a day ago on both events. Why did those are significant developments?
The government submitted yesterday evidence that that the visa was denied.
Right.
And it's I believe there's a colorable argument for mootness, but I don't believe.
No, my only question is the threshold one. Why wouldn't you have told us that when it happened? It's interlaced with all the arguments.
My understanding of 28J letters is they supply legal authority.
You know, it's just any new development. Factual. But anyway, I don't want to bicker with that, but the removal also has consequences, arguably. Now we're going to have to discuss it. You haven't even had an opportunity to respond to the mootness on the denial.
And I believe that I've seen previous cases where the court orders briefing on mootness after the oral argument.
Well, do you intend to reply to their 28J from yesterday?
I believe they should make a motion for dismissal or mootness grounds or some legal. I don't think in 28J.
All right. So what, in your mind, what arguments are left remaining?
That the whole picture of this case, and the government did supply the dismissals of his two felony matters, are cooked up by his wife and children. And there's been four criminal prosecutions in the record that have been dismissed for lack of evidence. So he is.
You're saying that there was factual errors to the hardship determination and there is no moral bad character issue because it was cooked up. Those are the two arguments?
But
we, under current Fifth Circuit law, can we consider either of those arguments? Yes or no? Current law? No.
No, under current Fifth Circuit law. And I know that Satu V. Wilkinson was heard by the Supreme Court November 28th, and there could be change in that. But at the moment.
Well, what are you recommending that we do? Have you asked us to hold this for Wilkinson or not?
I have not, Your Honor. I believe.
So what do you want our panel to do?
I want the
consistent with Fifth Circuit law.
Yeah, to look at the administrative closure and continuance issue.
Okay.
The BI with them, because that is really where the reason they everyone has colored their opinion on this is because they believed he's a sexual assault person. He's a criminal. He has never had a conviction in his life. He's the hero of this story.
The BIA's reversible error as to administrative closure is, and finish the sentence. We should reverse them because they did what wrong?
They did not apply the correct factors. They applied random factors, their own interest in administrative efficiency to get him out of the country.
But a salient point that they made in denying both their own administrative closure or your request to continue it was that he had taken so long, over 10 years, to notify them of his cooperation. Is that right?
That's true.
And that is a factor under both multi-factor tests, delay by the non-citizen.
The Sanchez-Sosa factors do not have delay as a issue. But for the administrative closure, yes, it's one of the factors.
Okay.
But the BIA's decision took two paragraphs to say, and it's barely intelligible because I had trouble myself understanding.
True. But it's clear they're saying any non-citizen that wants to rely on the fact he's cooperating with law enforcement needs to tell us at least within a decade of the cooperation. That's sort of a fair, just intuitive point, right? Why? Do you want to answer that?
That's a sort of a bigger picture question. The public has an interest in foreign nationals cooperating with law enforcement.
Yeah.
And that Congress passed that statute.
Yeah.
So there's that to balance. I mean, the thing is, the DI did not balance anything. They stated two negative factors: delay in filing it and administrative efficiency because the cancellations already been denied. But that is not balancing anything. They never mentioned any positive factors, such as the public's interest in him cooperating, such as the colorability of his U visa. Did they ever look at the U visa? He was the victim of a stabbing in Brooklyn in 2002. He cooperated with the police, and for that, they certified his record. Yes, certified his cooperation, but that was when he was in removal proceedings. But here, I guess we're back to, why is he in removal? Why is he just not a person who helps his family? It's because his family has cooked up criminal prosecutions against him that have led to his deportation right now. He was in Williamson County Jail for the past year and a half. And when he got his final case dismissed, did I stop and say, wait a minute, let's look at if these false prosecutions were have any effect on anything? No, they just deported him the same day. And that's why there's I sympathize with the court, there's a lot of moving parts in this case. But if anyone's the hero here, it's him. He's never had a criminal conviction.
Yeah, and I understand your argument, and it's forcibly made, but just to clear it out so we can focus on what's before us, you acknowledge there's controlling law against us being to assess the fact determinations of Hart, yes?
Yes.
And you are not asking us at the moment to hold this case for Wilkins?
No, I think now with the events that have intervened, cancellation might be a stretch because his U.S. citizen daughter is the one who's trying to prosecute him, and there's no evidence in the record that she's is in any way going to miss him at all. So I think that's...
So you aren't asking for a hold. I understand. So
yeah.
So we've reduced the issue before us to your claim. I mean, I understand factually you think the family has concocted this, but the legal error that BIA made, just help me again, is...
Is not balancing the positive factors against the negative factors.
Okay, it's the multi-factors test.
Yes. And I would like to, you know, that this is raised in the briefs and the counsel alluded to it, but didn't... It's not... The court may know this, that there's a circuit split on whether an IJ can entertain a waiver for a U visa.
And as on that point, that's moot. Why should we decide that?
The court should not decide it. The court should remand to the BIA, which never addressed
it. Why should we do that? Hasn't the U visa been denied?
Well, the judge could still waive his inadmissibility. So the reason the U visa was denied was because the CIS assumed he was guilty of his crimes.
Did you ever ask, does the record, do you have a record site that you ever asked the IJ to waive inadmissibility?
The IJ, no, because the IJ...
Okay, so then how can we find error in the BIA?
The BIA was notified of the request for LDG, the whole idea of the IJ remanding to the IJ to let her...
It wasn't raised. It wasn't raised before the IJ. Why should the BIA... Isn't the normal practice?
I guess, is it a legal issue or a factual issue that...
Sounds like a legal issue to me. Wasn't raised.
If you look at the record, the IJ never acknowledged the U visa. Not a single statement in the record. Certainly, counsel raised it, said, I have a U visa pending, but no action on the motions to have been closed.
I thought you wanted a hold pending UCIS. You were asking them to decide it. There is a split on... If you had asked the IJ, then we'd have to resolve that maybe. But if you never did it, then we would need authority from you, preferably Fifth Circuit authority, that we would vacate the BIA for failing to deal with an issue that was never preserved in front of the IJ. Do you understand the
yes.
way I look? So do you have a case that says an issue that's presented to the BIA but was not preserved, we would vacate for their failure to have addressed it?
I don't have a case on that fact, but the board has a duty to address arguments made before it. So if they wanted to say, you didn't raise it, so we're not going to rule on it, they could say that. But they didn't say that.
They didn't say that. We'll see what the government says about that.
Yes. And I want to maybe bring out an alternative resolution to this case. And it was from a case from the First Circuit called Manguri, and I apologize I did not bring this to the court's attention, but it's recently come to Mangurio v. Lynch, 794 F3D 119. That's 2015.
Again, I'm not trying to be harsh. It's just to have good lawyering. If you knew about the case, they don't have it. You could 28J that. That's a legal.
This is towards mootness, so I just, in case the court is hung up on, okay, on the mootness.
This might go in your response to their 28J.
Yes.
Why don't you put it there? Because they have no idea.
Fair enough. Because we could remand for fact finding on the correct application of law or not, that for the BIA to update the court and say, did the CIS assume he was guilty and deny his waiver and deny his application? And in this case, that they did that, and it was, they, every 90 days, the BIA would say, what is up with the current status of the, and for the record, I mean, the U visa is not completely dead. There's an I-290B motion to reopen showing them their error that they assumed he was guilty and now he's innocent. So that was a new development after their denial. That was November of this, just last month.
November of last month.
November 2023. So it was several months after the denial. I don't know if the court is aware, too, that I mentioned there's four false prosecutions. So we have the one in 2016, his older daughter Jasmine. We have the two in 2021 against him, one for aggravated assault against Judith, one for sexual assaults against Judith. All three dismissed. His girlfriend now, who's a U.S. citizen, was also accused by Judith of assault. And that case was dismissed for lack of evidence. So if the court is going to take away any sort of argument that justice was not done, and the government is in a rush to sort of get him out.
Was there an independent finding that by virtue of not paying taxes, he'd be in the same situation? Put the criminal case totally to one side.
Why CIS? Is that what the court's asking?
Well, you know the record better. I just have a vague memory that there was a separate.
That was sort of the good moral character only on the hardship, and we're just saying that that's pretty much not before the court now because cancellation is not reviewable. But yeah, there was a finding that he denied.
I see, you're right.
Yeah. So they denied it based on, they accused him of serious criminal conduct, which it's easy to say that, but how does one prove a negative that I'm actually innocent and that's cooked up? And that's where he's the victim kind of here.
It sounds like it's still pending. So we wouldn't intervene even if we could. This is all happening, and you're telling us for the first time now. There was a November request to reconsider?
Yes, okay. Reopen and reconsider, yeah.
On these grounds, the ones you're telling us about?
Yes, and okay. Literally the Travis.
We don't know anything about this.
No, it seems literally last Friday was the second criminal case was dismissed. It was, we submitted evidence that it's going to be dismissed in November, but it actually was dismissed December 4th.
Okay.
So, this man has done what he could to stay in this country for his children, for his rights, for his, you know, he's not a criminal, and the CIS has treated him as a criminal. If the court has any other questions, I'll take.
You have rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ms. Phillips? Well, it's only fair if I give you equal treatment. There is a huge amount of events that have occurred that we only begin to peek at yesterday.
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, Rebecca Hoffberg Phillips on behalf of the United States Attorney General. Your Honor, I feel like I'm playing catch up myself because, Your Honor, Petitioner's counsel has been in the better position to know this information than I have regarding his U visa petition. I've only just found these things out. Literally within the last, I found it out a couple days ago regarding the U visa because he's continued to argue that the court should consider error in that regard. And so I had no way of thinking that it may not exist anymore. And apparently 1 week after his reply brief.
The administrative file, the A file is not with you. You wouldn't be aware of this at all.
Yes. No, Your Honor. The A file is
okay,
actually.
Well, then you don't need to apologize more, but the removal happened a while ago.
The removal happened in September. The way that I found out about it was that I contacted the DA's office to find out the status of the criminal cases. What happened was, as soon as he was released from criminal custody from the sexual abuse charge, he was immediately taken into DHS custody. They must have realized that there was no stay in effect, because normally they'll reach out to me if there are plans for removal. The last I'd heard, they had no plans because he was in criminal custody. They could not make the plans. He wasn't in DHS custody. Immediately after his release, when the charge was dismissed on the sexual abuse charge, and I called the DA to find out what is happening with this case, she told me that the second criminal case could not go forward because he wasn't there to defend himself, and it was his counsel for the criminal case that was making those arguments to dismiss the second charge because he wasn't here. So the dismissal of that case is largely based on him not being here anymore, as opposed to a finding of innocence. The problem is that I didn't find out.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Both of you explained it. It just helps us. There's a bit of a mess. Maybe the case is reducing itself. Am I right that you would say, given the first 28J, there isn't mootness, according to published Fifth Circuit law, by virtue of him being sent, but there may be mootness given the second 28J? Do you want to start there, or where do you want to start?
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly it. So many issues are moot, but it's not because of his removal. I just want to put that out there. Yes, what's moot? U visa, moot. It's already been denied, so you can't argue that it should be sent back in order for the agency to continue the case for its adjudication or put it in closure.
Are you aware that there's a motion to reconsider?
I only just became aware of that 2 days ago, or yesterday I got confirmation of what's still pending before the board and before USCIS, which is why I've just been filing this just now. I was waiting for them to get back to me because they also are two different entities between EOIR and DHS and USCIS.
I don't speak for my colleagues, but you may want to consult with the opposing counsel and see if there's a joint motion to dismiss.
There isn't a joint motion to dismiss. What?
The appeal, if the only thing left is something that's still pending in the immigration courts, his motion to reconsider.
There's no joint motion pending at this point.
Well, there's no motion at all, but you're suggesting now we should dismiss.
Well, I'm not saying you should deny. You should deny it, the petition, not dismiss. Well, I guess dismissal makes it seem like we're saying that everything is moot and the cancellation claim and the termination claim can be denied.
Deny in part and dismiss.
Exactly. And there's no reason to hold for Wilkinson in this case, and the government certainly wasn't advocated because Castillo Gutierrez is in the government's favor in terms of the non-reviewability of hardship claims, which with respect to whether they're a mixed question of law and fact. In that case, abrogated Trejo. And so right now, Wilkinson is pending. It was just recently argued.
If our law were abrogated, this would just end up getting held on cert, and then there'd be a remand to conform to that.
Yes, we could do supplemental something along the lines if the court wanted to. But our position
Heard he said he doesn't want to hold it either.
So. Yes, and so if he doesn't want to hold it, we're certainly not advocating, because this court's law is favorable to the government's position as it currently stands, and that's the position we're taking regarding the non-reviewability of hardship claims. However, in this case, the court should do the simplest thing possible. Find no good moral character based on lack of tax payment. That is all you need to do here. That is the only issue you need to figure out if you can do that. It is the simplest way because it has no regard to any of these pending criminal matters.
Okay, I'm a little mixed up. I thought we didn't even have jurisdiction to revisit whether there's a
if the court finds that so the good moral character discretionary finding is a little bit different than the hardship finding with respect to the case in Wilkinson is regarding hardship.
Well, I know what that is.
Yeah.
I thought there was a parallel rule, but it's not. There is some level of judicial review of the
Well, to the extent that, if he raises, we still can review constitutional and legal claims, which is why, he was trying to claim with respect to.
Yeah, but what are you telling us is a no good moral character finding, which has been affirmed by the BIA, reviewable here because it's a mixed question of law or fact, or is it not reviewable?
I'll say that part is not reviewable.
So then why would we give the relief you just asked us for?
Because the termination part is reviewable but lacks merit. So deny in part on the Niz Chavez argument is squarely controlled by court precedent. So that's denial in part. Dismissal in part is for the lack of jurisdiction over the cancellation discretionary findings because he doesn't raise a reviewable claim of law or a constitutional claim. Sorry to clarify that. And then the moot issue is the U visa denial because that claim for more time for the agency to look at that is moot now because it's already been denied.
We haven't seen his response, that your motion, that letter to us.
Right.
One or two paragraphs came in last night.
Yes, Your Honor, and if I had known sooner, I mean, I don't understand. I personally did not understand why he did not alert the court sooner. He's the one in communication with USCIS getting the notifications. We don't get notifications from USCIS. So I proactively reached out because I started to realize that I was sort of the one giving all the updates to the court, and I didn't realize that it had been denied. I got to be honest, USCIS can move pretty slow, and I was kind of shocked that they had already adjudicated this because they just tend to take years to happen. So,
most non-citizens are pro se.
Yeah.
Don't speak English, don't know. So OIL is in a unique position to actually backstop all of them. He happens to have counsel. Don't know how good his English is, but doesn't seem to me too much of a burden for OIL to be checking as to an event. We appreciate you gave it to us, but in my personal opinion, OIL would check on this well in advance in every case. Most of them are pro se.
You said OIL?
Office of Immigration Litigation.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were talking.
Isn't that you?
Yes, that is me. We call it OIL.
Yeah. I'm just saying when you say it's his job, we don't. There are many, many, many non-citizens that don't have lawyers. I agree with a lawyer, but you doing this stuff a little in advance, because it's going to significantly alter this case, perhaps.
Yes.
But you've heard his primary argument now, which is this is concocted, and the dismissals reflect that.
Right. I'll say this. First of all, again, if you want to rely on the lack of tax payment for good moral character and say that his waiver of an argument to dispute. I just want to start with that because I would tell the court not to get into all of the things related to the criminal case and the arrests and what the agency should do, because there's a much simpler way here. The agency on ROA 10, the board says, you lack good moral character solely because of the lack of tax payment for the purposes of voluntary departure, which has a 5-year look back period. The board couldn't rely on the arrest for that good moral character finding because the 2016 arrest went too far back. So the board says, we're not going to consider the arrest, only the lack of tax payment, lack of good moral character on that basis alone. So it is only logical that if a 5-year look back period of no tax payment results in a lack of good moral character, then a 10-year look back period of no tax payment also in and of itself results in a
And this is, remind me, this is developed in your brief?
It is, yes, Your Honor. This was my primary argument to not even reach the hardship and to not worry about the other issues here because it's so simple and straightforward and because he's never challenged that finding. So it's a waived finding with respect to the lack of tax payment being, first of all, as being any factor. So as any factor, he's never said the agency can't rely on that. And what the government is saying, he's never argued that they shouldn't rely on it, and they only relied on it for the voluntary departure good moral character, which is exactly the same standard as the cancellation good moral character standard, except for the period of time that you look back. And it's only greater on the cancellation context as opposed to the voluntary departure. So the government's asking for the simplest finding here, which is, of course, that it's unreviewable as a factual matter and that it's waived. But to the extent that you want to decide anything with the cancellation claim, there's no need to get to any of the arrests at all.
If we don't decide the U visa portion of the case is moot, then his primary argument is that, and now I have to admit, the BIA's two paragraphs on this are a little hard for me to understand. They aren't a clear-cut application of a multi-factor test. The two tests, do they specify that delay is an salient element, even an element?
Yes, and the matter of Avedisian factors, so there's two. So the one is the Sanchez-Sosa. I have the standard under that. I mean, if you were looking at a continuance, you'd look at, first of all, we argued that he waived the continuance thing. But I'm just going to go through the factors. DHS's response, whether the visa is prima facie approvable, the reason for continuance and procedural factors, that was the Sanchez-Sosa. And I'll say that probably looking more at the fact that there was a lack of opposition by DHS was more relevant to mention in the continuance context. But because that claim was waived, the government didn't.
I wasn't convinced by the waiver. So let's assume that's not convincing. What is the element that the BIA would affirm the BIA on?
Sorry, what is the
lack of continuance? Because if, as I understand it, if you this is technical, but USCIS, if they don't oppose it, that favors him getting the continuance.
It.
What's the factor that doesn't favor him?
It's the prima facie approvable one. Because if you think that there's a, which of course turned out to be true because he got denied the waiver application, right? So you have to look at how the likelihood of success is another way of framing the prima facie approvability. So in this case, seeing that there wasn't a likelihood of success on it, which there clearly was not because it was denied, would be another really important consideration in both the admin closure and the continuance context. I laid out the matter of the Vedasian factors. I put them in my brief at footnote 18 if you want to see the full ones. The reason the closure is sought, the basis for any opposition, the likelihood of success, the anticipated duration, the responsibility of either party, if any, in contributing to the current or anticipated delay, the ultimate outcome. So this is where the agency focused, because this underlying crime for the U visa petition happened in 2002. And he waited until he was already in removal proceedings in 2018. That's so much more than a decade. We're almost at two decades, which clearly significantly contributes to the delay, because had he sought it back then, the backlog in U visas was significantly less at that point than it is today. Today, you wait years and years to get a U visa because you get waitlisted. There's not visas available even once it's approved. And so his own contribution to the delay was really an important factor because it's so egregious in this case. And this court's case, Hernandez, says that the board need not articulate every factor, which is really important because some factors are not as important in every case, and some factors are really important, like that one in this case. I agree that usually you acknowledge whether DHS has opposed or not opposed. That's usually a factor they consider. But a lot of times in cases like this, I think that it's fine to focus on factors that seem just so glaring, like the delay here and his and the likelihood of success. Those are two huge ones, and they apply to both the continuance and the admin closure. And the agency should have done a better job of distinguishing the Sanchez-Sosa and the matter of a Vedasian factors. They are distinct factors because they are distinct forms of like what you're asking for. But in this case, because of the similarity in the delay and the likelihood of success, those were overlapping criteria. And I think the board saw them sort of collapsed a little bit together. But I think in this case, the court, you know, should not really reach those issues because it is moot. And the court remands on that. The agency will just say, well, the U visa's in here. How are we going to continue this case for U visa adjudication if it's been denied? The fact that he's asking for reconsideration, I can get more into these arrests. As the applicant for something, you have a burden of proof that you don't have when you're the DA prosecuting a case. So when the DA says that there's not enough evidence to move forward in a case, it doesn't necessarily mean that you didn't do anything wrong. And I think that was the whole problem with his approach to this case was, prove that I did something wrong or I did nothing wrong. That's what the DA proves in a criminal court, innocent until proven guilty. But in an immigration proceeding, when you are an applicant for relief and you carry the burden of proof with respect to these discretionary findings, and you're given notice and opportunity to make it possible to show that you've done nothing wrong or that these factors shouldn't be held against you, you have to take advantage of that time and opportunity, or the agency can infer things against you because you were arrested for something. Not only was he arrested, I mean, these are some of the worst crimes you can think of. Sexually abusing your own children is not to be taken lightly. I have no idea why anyone would make up such charges against their father. I couldn't tell you. Maybe they did, right? So if they did, though, why not have a statement? And he said that he would produce his wife as a witness. He never did. He submitted letters. This is all on the record, and it's all in my brief as well, because he submitted letters from his children and his wife that glaringly don't address the whole thing about his arrest. Why not say something about that? If you're going to produce letters from them, you have the reasonably available evidence that he could produce to the immigration court to say, you know, I didn't do any of this, and they set me up because the wife was jealous of my new girlfriend, and she tried to turn the kids against me in a custody dispute. Okay, I mean, it's a horrible thing to do, but now we know that's what really happened. And the problem is that that's his claim of what happened, but we have no corroborating evidence from the wife or the children. And so I understand he's going to try to make this case to USCIS about why they should reconsider. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, the agency is entitled to make inferences based on the evidence that it is given. And he bears the burden of proof as an applicant with the preponderance of the evidence in these cases. It is not for the government to disprove things or to prove things when he is an applicant for relief. I think that he had plenty of notice and opportunity here.
The only loose end then, this is jumping differently. He said, in addition to wanting administrative closure, in addition to wanting a continuance, he also asked the BIA to remand it so the IJ could make the determination about inadmissibility.
And we
Your answer was, citing the record, page 31, that he forfeited it.
Yes.
When I look at 31, I don't see it.
Well, what happened was, I footnoted on my page 16 of my brief, footnote 14. He expressly admitted in his supplemental appeal brief that USCIS, and not the immigration judge, has the authority to consider a U visa. This is on pages ROA 31 was the supplemental appeal brief.
Right, but that's not forfeiting that he could simultaneously say the IJ has that authority. We know he was asking USCIS to do it.
Right,
he's telling the BIA, remand it because I now want to get into the world of the split and ask the IJ to do it.
Well, his position was that USCIS should adjudicate it, and without expressly stating that he was trying to have the IJ, he basically switched positions in his supplemental appeal to the board.
And it's not one of the others, what I'm saying. Let me rephrase it differently.
Yeah.
Do you have authority? You don't deny that he raised this as a request for relief to the BIA, correct?
He raised it in his initial brief.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then they don't mention it.
And they don't mention it because...
Is that reversible on its own?
No, Your Honor, for two reasons. One is because his supplemental brief did not, it indicated he had switched positions to saying USCIS. I can pull up the record. It's on page 31 of the record. If you want me to, I can get you the exact language, but I could see, I remember thinking.
I remember. You don't need to look at it. You're talking something out. My question is.
Oh, he said he must file the application to the U.S. Must. He's quoting, and this is the government's argument as to why the IJ lacks authority. It's always been our position. He is saying you must file with USCIS.
So, who's the he?
I'm sorry, petitioner. Petitioner on page 31.
He's saying, I know I must. So that's your waiver. He's
yes.
Not forfeited it. He actually relinquished it. He
said, right.
I only will go there.
He said that in order to do this, a non-citizen must file with USCIS. This is how I understood. This is what he has written. And this is if the board reads that and says, okay, well, it's not an issue anymore then. That's how I understood it. The board could have said something about that in its decision and said, you know what, to the extent he initially raised it, he's rescinded that. They didn't say that, but I took that as a rescission of that position. So it's not remandable, reversible error. And number two, the fact is that it because USCIS has already denied the U visa itself, there's no waiver to adjudicate. And maybe I should have started with that.
No, you had started with
that. So, yes.
Your time trickles away to
yes.
Nothing, I just want to understand what your bottom line position is. Don't hold for Wilkinson.
Correct.
Okay. With respect to the Ms. Chavez issue, deny, because our precedent
yes.
Settles that. With respect to the good moral character issue, dismiss?
Yes.
Okay. With respect to the continuance part, is that a separate issue that we need to deny on?
I would say deny because you had jurisdiction over that claim, but it is moot because it has been denied.
Oh, I see. Right? Okay, I got
so
you.
Moot,
I got you. That comes
moot.
Within the moot. And the mootness with respect to the U visa,
yes.
The counsel opposite will get the opportunity to respond to your 28J with respect to mootness.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Okay, unless the court has any further questions, the government will rest on its brief.
Mr. O'Connor? If you heard Judge Duncan's questions, it might be helpful to respond to those.
That's great. I hate to waive anything, but I find that Castillo Gutierrez controls, and there's no review. I'm not even sure there's review of the good moral character if it's a question of fact that's decided by the IJ. I think I don't really have anything different to say on those. The only issue, well, the issues that were at the end there about mootness and about the LDG argument where, the government is saying that because the U visa is denied, that the IJ has no power to grant a non-immigrant waiver of inadmissibility, which is a different section of law. It's a 212D3 as opposed to 212D14, which is the U visa waiver. But the IJ can grant that because if she grants it, the case is reopened. If the case is reopened at the USCIS, then no more waivers needed. Your visa is approved.
That goes to your mootness. That goes to the mootness point.
I think that goes to that. Even if the case is moot, that there's a grounds to remand to the BIA for their failure to address the LDG argument.
So you'll include argument on that, presumably, in your response to the 28J.
Yeah, now, and maybe we'll clarify it now. Would the court want a briefing on that, I assume, not just a letter?
I think why don't you start with a response to the 28J, and we'll inform counsel. But she did read from the transcript suggesting your client didn't just forfeit something, but actually relinquished it, saying, I must go.
I think she's hanging a little too much too weight on it. I believe it was a boilerplate where I think I might have been quoting a case, but I'm not familiar with the actual section of record. But the supplemental brief did not waive his argument. In fact, the first brief goes through very clearly the LDG argument.
Supplemental to the BIA.
Supplemental to the BIA, yes.
Yeah, we're talking about whether he relinquished it in front of the IJ.
In front of the IJ?
One, did he ever say to the IJ, oh, I want you to make the waiver finding? Or two, worse, did he actually say to the IJ, you can't, they must?
He never said that to the IJ. He never said anything to the IJ about any LDG matter.
All right. Go on with your rebuttal.
Okay. Yeah. But I just, as far as that matter goes, he certainly raised it to the BIA, and over several years, they did not consider it at all. Now, I guess the court also just needs to look at something that was mentioned in the supplemental brief, but Coffin v. U.S., is there a presumption of innocence in the United States? We know there is in criminal cases. What is the effect of somebody, do we assume he's guilty? And the government said that he needed to prove a negative, that he needed to get letters from the victim, the alleged victim, to say he didn't do it. That's a very constitutionally questionable position, because if you look at his position, he did everything he could to show that the court case was proceeding. He asked the CIS to continue the matter because he knew his trials were coming up. They wouldn't do it. Of course, that is in the 28J material that she supplied yesterday. But also in that material, and I know the court has not had a chance to look at it, but Brady versus Maryland disclosure from the 2017 case, buried in that 28J. The Jasmine, the first victim, expressly states with her mother that nothing happened. So she recants her testimony. So, and that's like sworn testimony. That's perjury. So that just shows. And of course, that wasn't available to his initial counsel during the initial trial before the IJ, but it all shows that the USCIS had a very colored picture of the U visa when it, in July.
Also, so what do you want us, what do you say briefly we should do directly?
Remand this case to let the BIA look at the moving picture of where we're at and let them assess, first of all, is there a continuance possible? Because the U visa reopening has been filed, and it was based on a colored perception of the criminal record. and because they could consider the argument that he may renew that waiver before the IJ, even if the U visa is not yet reopened, that he can get that waiver in his pocket so that when it's reopened, he has that in front of him.
Well, there is a debate before the Supreme Court now. Wilkerson, what's the relevance of that to your situation?
If Wilkinson reverses this court's holding in Gutierrez, then the court can review the good moral character findings, and it can review the exceptional extreme usual hardship. So that would be a important development, and that's why.
How does that play on? I suppose that they go you what would say your way. How does that translate in this case?
If we were on remand, then he would have another opportunity to present to this court. If the BIA continued to deny exceptional hardship and bad moral character, he would have a chance to have the application of law to the legal facts looked at. Did the BIA also color their view based on a presumption of guilt on criminal cases? If the court just dismisses the case, petition for rehearing, I suppose, but I don't know what the court can do on Wilkinson, whether, you know, abeyance is
possible. Or you said you weren't asking us to hold. Judge Higginbotham has asked you, what do you want us to do with Wilkinson? Have you changed?
Hold. Yeah, I've changed my, I mean, in the sense that
your time's up. Thank
okay.
you, counsel.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. We'll call the second case of the day.